From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Kassel, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Thank you all so much. Listen, we have a pretty good show for you today. For a while now, we have been trying to get Hillary Clinton on this show. Obvious choice. Amazing, pioneering first lady, then a U.S. senator, presidential candidate, now secretary of state. But we just can't make it work. Her schedule is crazy. So we're going to go with someone with just a little more time in his hands, her husband. President Bill Clinton will join us later to play Not My Job. But first, we'd like to have a state visit with you. Give us a call. It's 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Ayla Overcash from Bend, Oregon.
Hey, Ayla Overcast.
Cash.
Overcash?
Yep.
Okay, nice to have you with us. Bend is, where is Bend?
Central Oregon.
Central Oregon. What do you do there?
Very little. No, I'm just kidding. I'm a teacher librarian and an English teacher.
Oh, wow. Teaching kids to read. Are they still interested in books?
It depends on the kid. Mm-hmm. A lot of them do them electronically now, which is kind of, I'm moving that way myself.
Yeah. When you hand them a book, do they start poking at the cover, expecting it to somehow move?
They do, as a matter of fact. Yeah. They're kind of thrown by them, but I keep Band-Aids in the library for paper cuts.
Well done. Well, welcome to our show, Ayla. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to one of the founders of the Axis of Evil comedy tour, stand-up comic Mr. Maz Jobrani.
Hey.
Hi.
Also say hello to an author and the man the New York Times calls an obscure, semi-famous humorist, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hi, Ayla.
And we are pleased to welcome, making her Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me debut, a comedian performing June 28th at Central Park Summer Stage in New York. Ms. Jessie Klein is here.
Hi. Hi.
Ayla, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Kassel is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you will win our prize. Carl's voice on your very own home answering machine or voicemail. You ready to go?
I'm so nervous.
Don't be.
Okay.
But are you ready?
I really want this prize. I'm ready.
All right. Focus. We can do this together. Here's your first quote.
How long before every Happy Meal box carries a photo of a 350-pound man with his shirt off?
That was the blog Hot Air grumbling at the new graphic warning labels revealed this week for what?
Cigarette packages.
Yes, indeed. Cigarette packages. Apparently, the president snuck out back of the Rose Garden for one smoke too many because the FDA has finally decided to get graphic about it. No more, the Surgeon General has determined that's... No. The new warning labels say cigarettes cause cancer and smoking can kill you and have graphic pictures to prove it, like diseased lungs and a corpse. Can you imagine the phone call that guy got? The bad news, your cancer is terminal. The good news, I got you a modeling job.
You know, with young smokers, these are just going to become collectibles.
Oh, yeah. I'll trade you.
Did you get the one with the stiff?
I'll trade you two diseased lungs for a tracheotomy.
You know what they should do? They should put the cigarettes in those plastic things that, you know, that electronic equipment comes in that you can't open?
Yeah.
That would slow down.
That would dissuade them.
Oh. Yeah.
Blister packs.
That's it. Blister pack cigarettes. That's it.
The other problem is that cigarette smokers get stressed out so easily, they'll look at that picture and be like, oh, God, I need a smoke.
That's true. Are they going to extend this to other things? They're going to sell little bags of potato chips with a mirror on them?
Mm-hmm.
Ayla, here is your next quote.
Spending $1 billion and dropping bombs sounds like hostilities to me.
That was Senator Jim Webb talking about the Obama administration, insisting that it doesn't count as hostilities, even if they're continually dropping bombs on what?
Libya.
Yes, yes indeed. Libyan war. Very good. President has a problem. We've been bombing Libya for months, but the War Powers Act says he has to get congressional approval within 90 days since, quote, the start of hostilities, unquote. So what's a president to do if he's afraid Congress won't give him that approval? Refuse to call it hostilities. Then there's no congressional approval needed. So this bombing campaign is friend-stilities. We're not at war with Libya. We're just having a rough spot in our relationship. We're getting some relationship counseling, and to make sure we don't seem hostile, we're careful to make only I statements. I feel that you should be blown up.
You know, we're not the ones in the fight, but we're kind of holding the coat for the guy that's in the fight.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But just to be sure, there's no hard feelings, not hostile. We're sending over two drones at once. The first one drops the bomb. The second one drops a note with some compliments. Oh, that crater makes you look thin. Here is your last quote.
So far today, he's gotten his name, phone number, and address wrong. That's a rough day in first grade.
That was pundit Jameson Fosser, somewhat gleefully enjoying the bad day experienced by the former ambassador to China, John Huntsman, as he announced his intention to get what new job?
President.
Yes, he wants to be president. He made his announcement. Proving he fits in with the rest of the GOP field, John Huntsman started his campaign by screwing it up. That's John Huntsman, John without an H, by the way. That is not what you would have seen if you went to his campaign website on the day of his launch. They spelled his name wrong, and they asked people to contact his campaign, located at 123 Main Street, by calling 123-456-7890. A number so generic and meaningless, if you called it, Tim Pawlenty would answer.
But the guy's got great teeth.
I don't know. You know, the only thing about the whole perfect hair and teeth, I mean, I don't know a ton about him, but I've obviously seen a lot of him this week. I think he's wearing too much makeup or something. Like, to me, he looks like a wax figure of John Huntsman.
Really?
He has, like, a Madame Tussauds quality to him if you look closely on TV.
It's like he's already been president, and this is the exhibit from the Hall of Presidents.
Yes, he's a little, like, there's an
hello,
animatronic.
I am John Huntsman.
Yes, a little bit.
We're wondering, though, I mean, his big problem is he has to get over this fact that he worked for the Obama administration. And that's a problem for the GOP base. Maybe he should take the Tiger Woods route, confess what he's done, say he has an illness, and check into the Malibu Center for Recovering Moderates.
Or he could take the Barack route and say, as you say, these aren't hostilities. You say, I wasn't really working. The word working. How do you define working?
Yeah. I did a terrible job as ambassador to China. Well, I just sat around and ate dim sum all day.
I messed it up on purpose.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I imported lead-based toys. Helped that happen.
Carl, how did Ayla do in our quiz?
Ayla, you had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail. Congratulations.
Yay!
Well done. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Jesse, we live in an age where we expect near instant delivery of almost anything. Now, thanks to a new company, you can get what delivered to you within 15 minutes?
Well, I hope the answer is ice cream, but I don't think it is.
It isn't, sadly. Not as delicious, but maybe more useful.
More useful than ice cream? I honestly can't think of a single thing.
I'll give you a hint. You can have one almost before you hang up on your one phone call.
I don't know. Wait, what is it? I'm blanking.
Clearly, you have not had a lot of experience with the criminal justice system.
Not recently.
No.
Not since I learned the lesson.
Sure. Well, sometimes you need one of these people. It's a person. You need
a lawyer.
Yes, yes.
A lawyer.
You only get one point, Jesse.
A lawyer bringing ice cream?
I know. That would be nice.
You're like, I didn't know Jesse was five.
I'm actually, that would be a good suggestion for lawyers if you want to be more, you know, appreciated. Bring ice cream.
Sure, why not?
It's a new legal startup. It's called Lawyer Up. That's what it's called. It promises clients they will have legal representation by their side within 15 minutes of a call. You have to pay $100 for the first time use of the service. But if you're the kind of person who thinks to himself, you know, there's a good chance I'm going to have a sudden need for a defense attorney, you can pay $5 a month as a subscription. We assume your lawyer will be delivered by a bored teenager driving an old compact car with a big plastic briefcase on the roof. And you know what's going to happen? They're going to get the order wrong. You're going to be like, oh, man, no, this is a tax lawyer. I just robbed a bank. I'm going to have to send it back.
Or your lawyer gets there and he's cold.
That'd be terrible.
Yeah. Or if he arrives in 20 minutes, you get him for free.
I wish. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Hidalgo Garcia.
Hidalgo Garcia? That's cool. Welcome to the show, Hidalgo. How are you?
Really excited, actually.
I'm excited to have you. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from sunny Phoenix, Arizona.
It's pretty sunny there.
Oh, yeah, sure is.
It gets awfully hot in the summer, does it not?
Just a little toasty.
A little toasty. Well, it's nice to have you with us, Hidalgo. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Hidalgo's topic?
Some things never change.
Soon after the first human walked upright, he kicked a ball, and soon after that, we assume, the first sports riot broke out. Turns out certain traditions in sports we thought were modern go back a long time. This week, our panelists are going to read you three news stories about recent revelations, proving there's nothing new under the sporting sun. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Oh, you betcha.
Oh, you're ready. All right. First, let's hear from Maz Jobrani.
Certain traditions in sports go back thousands of years, like, as we know, griping about the ref. According to a study of a Roman gladiator's nearly 2,000-year-old tombstone, the fighter was so mad about the officiating at his final fight, he decided to heckle the umpire from beyond the grave. The tombstone of Diodorus shows a gladiator standing over a fallen fighter who is signaling for surrender. The inscription reads, in translation, "After breaking my opponent Demetrius, I did not kill him immediately. Fate and the cunning treachery of Summa Rudis killed me." In other words, aw, come on, ref, I'm dying here. According to Professor Michael Carter of Brock University, the Summa Rudis was kind of a referee who oversaw gladiatorial combat, presumably in a black and white striped toga. Carter surmises from the scene pictured that Diodorus knocked his opponent down, which should have given him the victory and stopped the fight. But the ref didn't think so. He let the other guy get back up and keep fighting, and Diodorus was fatally wounded. His last words could have been, "Get some glasses, ref," once they're invented centuries from now.
Blaming the ref, gladiatorial combat 2,000 years ago, your next story comes from Jesse Klein.
Betting on sports, specifically against your own team, has led to the downfall of many a famous athlete, including Pete Rose and almost everyone on the infamous Chicago Black Sox. Unfortunately, this phenomenon isn't anything new. A Stanford scholar recently published an article on one of the first betting scandals ever recorded in sports. In Scotland, where it is believed the earliest curling leagues were organized, a 16th century Scottish curling team led by legendary curler Fergus Magnusson became local heroes after a winning streak led them to a spot in the regional finals. However, after what seemed to be an embarrassing loss to their weaker Glasgow rivals, questions were raised. An investigation revealed that the entire team had thrown the match in exchange for a rather unusual bribe offered by a fanatic and extremely wealthy supporter of the other side. That is, one sheep per player. This indecent proposal apparently proved too good to resist, and the team conspired to lose on purpose. Sam Wilton, the author of the article, believes the shamed Scots thought that they would get away with it because, quote, "Curling is such an absurd sport, it's very difficult to tell the difference between when someone's trying to win and when someone's trying to lose."
match fixing in 16th century Scottish curling. And your last story of ancient athletics comes from Tom Baudet.
Birdies, mulligans, deeks, and bunts. Sports terminology is as mystifying as it is old. And some of it is even older than you think, if you believe the conclusions of anthropologist Nancy Thomas Heidinger. Heidinger recently unearthed an ancient Aztec deerskin near Chichen Itza, which she claims is a style sheet for scribes writing about their beloved sport, tlachtli. This is the game that helped put the mess into Mesoamerica and is comparable to modern racquetball, soccer, basketball, and season one of Game of Thrones. Played with whatever they had around, wads of rubber, stones, the severed heads of enemies, tlachtli was a huge spectator event and apparently enjoyed by distant readers who needed sports writers, who needed a style book. It's amazing how many of these terms are still used in modern sports, says Heidinger. Losers kept their heads in the game, literally by having them used as the balls in later rounds. The paths to the hoops tended to be marked with gray matter and gore from the severed heads, and these bloody trails were called zihuatna, literally translated as dribble. Dribble, seriously, she says. I'm not just messing with your head.
All right, then. You got three choices. One of these was a discovery we saw in the news this week. Was it from Moz, how an ancient gladiator died blaming the ref for a bad call? From Jesse Klein, how curling was fixed in 16th century Scotland? Or from Tom Baudet, a sports writing style guide discovered in ancient Mexico? Which one of these is the real story of an old sport doing things a modern way?
I'll go with Tom Baudet.
You're going to go with Tom Baudet? Tom Baudet's story of the sports writing guide in ancient Mexico?
Yes.
That's your choice.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Thanks, Peter.
I sense some doubt.
I do have some doubt.
All right.
I'll take option one.
Option one. That was Maz's story?
Yeah. Yes.
It's one about the gladiator. You're taking that story. All right. Well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to the person who brought this ancient sport to light.
An epitaph for a gladiator named Diodorus outright blamed the referee for his ultimate defeat and death.
That was Michael Carter, professor of classics at Brock University in Canada, who offered this new interpretation of the ancient epitaph of the gladiator who died bitter. Congratulations, Adalga. You got it right. Well done. You earned a point for Maz Jobrani. You've won our prize. Carol Castle will record the greeting in your home answering machine. Well done.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for playing, Adalgo. Goodbye.
All right.
And now the game where we ask knowledgeable people about things they know nothing about. It's called Not My Job. In 2005, President Bill Clinton founded the Clinton Global Initiative, which has gone on to help more than 300 million people around the world. He's coming to Chicago next week for the CGI America Conference to help spur job creation in the U.S. And he joins us now in advance of his trip to Chicago so we can give him some tourism tips. President Clinton, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you.
Very excited to have you, sir. I have to ask, first of all, have you ever actually heard our show?
No.
Good. That is so totally the answer I wanted.
To be honest.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I just want you to know that we've treated you with the utmost respect on the really. Just,
so you hope I enjoyed it while it lasted.
I do, no I do. No, no. Just trust me on that. So we're very excited to have you come to Chicago next week. What are you going to be doing here?
Well, actually, we're having an experiment. We're trying to see whether if we had one of these CGI, Clinton Global Initiative, meetings where people all make commitments to do something, and we focused it exclusively on creating jobs and preparing people for the workforce, whether we could actually get enough commitments to make a difference, and even more importantly, whether the act of doing it would receive enough attention that other people would say, well, I could do those things in our community.
Now, I understand the way it works is in the Clinton Global Initiative in general, you get people to make commitments in terms of something they're going to do for the cause at hand.
Yes.
How do you enforce these commitments? If they don't come through and whatever the promise is, do they get, like, stern phone calls from you in the middle of the night?
Well, the way we haven't had to enforce them so much now, we just tell people, if you come to our meeting and you don't make a commitment, or you make it and you don't make any attempt to keep it, unless there's some third force preventing it, if people don't make the commitments or don't try to keep them, then we just don't invite them back.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
you snub them.
And the whole purpose of the meeting is to get beyond talking to doing. Once you actually have to put yourself on the line, and then you know somebody's going to know whether you did it or not, it clarifies things quickly, and you really just talk about what will work.
Well, I'm curious about your life these days. Can I ask you in general, what is more fun, being president or being ex-president?
I guess in terms of raw fun, I've never had any more fun in my life. I love this, but I love being president too. Even the bad days are good. And when you're president, you have more power to help more people, but you also are the prisoner of circumstances as well and countervailing political forces more.
Right.
When you're a former president, you have much less power, but you have a lifetime of experience and contacts. And if you got the energy, you can bring influence to bear on a small but still fairly substantial number of things where you can concentrate on it because you don't have to change the subject when you wake up in the morning and there's something else in the newspaper.
I've noticed you haven't mentioned the advantages of having an army, though, because...
Well,
I mean, I'm sure you see some
army,
problem. Yeah, an army.
An army, a movie theater, a weekend retreat.
Yeah.
A helicopter, a jet airplane, and they always play a song when you walk in a room.
Yeah.
The worst thing about not being president anymore is I was disoriented for 3 weeks because nobody ever played a song when I walked in.
Really?
I never knew where I was.
Mrs. Clinton didn't, like, just hum something for you just to ease the transition?
Well, you know, by the time I left office, she was a senator.
Right.
And then...
So you had to get an appointment to see her.
Basically, my major political identity has been as her spouse for the last decade. I like it that way, too.
Did she have to give you a little lesson as you made that transition in standing to the side and gazing adoringly?
No, actually, I sort of knew how to do that because because I had observed it in other pictures.
I understand. You've seen that, you know. You're flying all over the world with the Clinton Global Initiative. She's flying all over the world as a Secretary of State. I only imagine that when you guys want to have a date night, it must involve a week of staff work.
No, but that's not so bad. But what we try to do is to be home on the weekends. So, for example, she went to Montego Bay in Jamaica to meet with the Caribbean nations on their problems with narco trafficking.
That's what she told you. I just want to establish that was her story. But go on.
That's her story, and she's sticking to it. And,
right.
And then she testified before the Congress on Libya and Afghanistan, but she's coming home, so we'll get to spend the weekend together.
Do you guys Skype?
Do we what? No.
Skype.
Yeah. You don't like text to each other.
No, well, that's not quite true. We send texts when she's overseas or I'm overseas.
Yeah. Well, that's so cute to imagine you like
BBMing each other.
That's right.
Yeah,
LOL.
Now that I said that, I can't wait for somebody to pull them up. You know?
Yeah,
that's
I know.
Right. 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 They'll be boring but endearing.
What do you think of all the comedians? Because you were the butt of some humor back during your presidency. Did you ever pay any attention? Did it ever bother you? Did you enjoy it? Did you just not care?
Oh, yeah. No, I thought a lot of the Saturday Night Live guys were great.
Oh, you enjoyed that?
They had, and actually, a time or two, we had Phil Hartman came to Washington and did one of those press dinners with me once, and we, you know, pretended we took turns being me.
Who was a better you, him or you?
That night, I think he was a better me than I was. I was a little off my feet that night.
Well, Mr. President, we are delighted to have you with us, but we do want to play a game with you, and today we're...
This is the part where you make me look like a fool, right?
No, sir. Farthest thing from our mind. This is the part where you...
I'm going to create a job at my CGI America. So somebody will volunteer to be my tutor for a year.
All right, we've invited you here to play a game. We're calling...
Pinkie Pie, Fluttershy, and Twilight Sparkle.
So you're a former president, you're a Rhodes Scholar, you're famously well-informed. What could we be sure that an accomplished person like you would know nothing about? And then the answer came to us. The TV show My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. Answer three questions, or answer two out of three questions about the wonderful world of My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, and you win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine. Carl, who is President Clinton playing for?
The president is playing for Dave Parks of Chico, California.
All right. Poor Dave.
Poor Dave. Right. So here we go. You ready to do this? One of the current My Little Ponies is Rarity. That is her name, Rarity. What is her particular enthusiasm? A, she loves her little line of toys called My Even Tinier Ponies. B, giving other ponies makeovers. Or C, eating paste.
Eating what?
Eating paste, sir, Mr. President.
P-A-S-T-E?
P-A-S-T-E. Paste, sir.
B.
Yes, giving other ponies makeovers. Yes, that is in fact Rarity's. Big enthusiasm. Very fashion conscious, our Rarity is. All right, when ponies in Equestria discover their true talents in life, they earn something. What? A tattoo on their flank known as a cutie mark. B, a title such as Fluttershy the Inventive. Or C, the right to mate.
A.
A, you're going to go for A, a tattoo known as the cutie mark. Oh, you're right, sir.
I have to say, I think it's probably fair to say this is the highest stakes situation President Clinton has ever been in his entire life.
And he's doing so well.
He's killing it.
That's true. All right, well, let's see if he can be perfect. The pony's most powerful enemy is which of these? A, Krastos the Glue Maker. B.
If he's not, he ought to be.
Yeah, I know. B, the evil pony Nightmare Moon. Or C, the cynical grown-up Chester.
B.
B, you're going to go for the evil pony Nightmare Moon. You're right, Mr. President.
Wow.
Nightmare Moon is released in the opening episode from the prison where she's been held for 1,000 years and is only defeated by the ponies working together, and then they have a party. Carl, how did President Clinton do in our quiz?
President Clinton wins again, Peter.
Oh, my
you
God.
Have three correct answers, so the president wins for Dave Parks.
Another victory for you, sir. You've done so much, been elected twice, governor of Arkansas, the youngest governor ever. How does this stack up?
It's right up there.
President Bill Clinton is hosting the Clinton Global Initiative meeting next week in Chicago with a focus on job creation right here in the United States. President Clinton, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell. In just a minute, Carl will fly up to the Rhymosphere in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, though, we have some business to attend to. Last week on our show, we told you about the popularity of the My Little Pony cartoons among a certain set of 20 and 30-something men who call themselves bronies. We implied that perhaps these people might be unemployed and they might be found in their parents' basement. And the brony community reacted with righteous fury. So to help explain their point of view, we've invited on a former Wait, Wait intern and self-professed brony, Ted Anderson. Ted, great to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm good. Hello.
Now, Ted, speaking, you are a brony.
I am. I'm a brony. I'll admit it.
Now, and people say that we mischaracterize bronies. Are you, in fact, unemployed and living in your mother's basement?
Yeah, but don't blame that on the ponies.
Okay.
Let me just say, I was an English major and I worked for you guys, so I kind of had the deck stacked against me anyway in the job market.
I see. What is the appeal of this show to grown men like yourself?
You know, I was thinking about this. It's authentic. It's sincere. It is what exactly what it appears to be.
What it appears to be is a child's cartoon about big-eyed unicorns, Ted.
Well, not all of them are unicorns. Some are Pegasuses. Pegasus.
Pegasi. Yeah.
But no, this is a show where really they want to teach us, you know, good lessons about friendship and how to treat each other right and you know, how to help every pony get along.
Ted, we had President Clinton on a little while ago. We asked him three questions about My Little Pony.
Oh, did you?
He got all three right. Are you willing, as a representative of the brony community, to call President Clinton an honorary brony?
Oh, well, that's pretty high accolades, I suppose, for him and for us.
I think so.
Thank you for that.
You're very welcome. We did it for you. Ted Anderson, a former intern and a self-professed brony. Thank you, Ted.
Thank you.
Take care. Okay, panel, time for some more questions for you from the week's news. Tom, last week the city of Portland, Oregon drained their 8 million gallon reservoir at the cost of tens of thousands of dollars in response to a biological threat. What was that threat?
Oh, gosh, Portland. Dog pee in the park? No?
You're close, actually.
Yeah, okay. Is it
not a dog.
It's not a dog, but it's pee.
So therefore,
it must be a people?
Yes!
People pee!
Basically, this is what happened. A surveillance video caught a guy walking up to the reservoir and deciding to top it off, as it were. And now the chief of the Portland Water Bureau is under fire for his decision to deal with that problem by completely draining the reservoir. People were saying, come on, birds and other animals pee in the thing all the time. Oh, my God, birds and other animals pee in the thing all the time. And this is the amazing thing. The amazing thing, even though the guy was aiming at an 8 million gallon reservoir, he still managed to get some on the rim. Honestly.
And left the lid up.
All the women are like, yeah. Maz. First we had black and white, then we had color TV, then HD, and now 3D TVs. Well, a team at the University of California at San Diego is ushering in the next frontier for television. What?
4D TV?
No.
Live? Like they'll come to your house and actually act it out for you? It's called theater?
That's awful.
I've seen this.
Oh my God, Keith Olbermann is in the living room yelling at me. No, not that.
It's better than 3D, HD.
Better than, yeah. It's even more senses. You can see it. No.
Smell it?
Yes, you can smell it.
Smell-o-vision. It's here.
It's here.
Smelly TV.
60 years after Bugs Bunny predicted it, Smell-o-vision has arrived. Smellable TV has long been a dream for people who love cooking shows and a nightmare for people who love the Jersey Shore. Well, now a UCSD Samsung research team has developed a tiny electronic device that can generate 10,000 odors from your TV or cell phone. So you could smell pizza when you watch a Pizza Hut ad or catch a whiff of desperation when you turn on CNN. Smell Piers Morgan's flop sweat. Oh. It's not in production yet, but soon will come the day when you'll ask yourself, oh God, is that me or Al Roker?
Well, I'm just glad it doesn't exist now when they're still covering that peeing in the reservoir.
Exactly.
Story. No interest.
Maz, the Thai government has had about enough of tourists invading their country, getting drunk, and doing stupid things they later regret, which is why they're attempting to ban foreigners from doing what?
Going there?
No, they want tourists to still come to Thailand, but while they're there, they don't want them to do one thing that they've been doing a lot of.
Pee in the pond? No, that's too many. Probably thing to do when you're in Thailand. Thai food?
No.
Any hints there somewhere?
Is it a mammal?
No, it's not a mammal. I'm going to try this. I went to Thailand and all I got were these ass antlers.
Oh, tattoos.
Yes, they're tired of people coming to Thailand, which is a Buddhist nation, and getting sacred Buddhist symbols, phrases, or sayings tattooed as tramp stamps. That's really beginning to bother them. You know, that if people don't want that, they go home, they regret it. In some cases, they realize that instead of like a wise Buddhist saying, it's an arrow pointed downward in the Thai phrase, check for drugs here. The Thai culture minister is trying to ban these misguided souvenirs. They say, quote, it's not good and it offends Thai people's sensibilities. But seriously, all the things you can get on a trip to Thailand, and this is the one they're worried about.
Is it the location that matters? Is it the?
No, there's a lot of tramp stamping going on, but it's mainly just the Buddha symbols. They don't like that.
What about like a tattoo of Buddha's belly on your belly?
Superimposed one for one. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and next week in Nashville, Tennessee, with special guest Vince Gill will be joining us. So that's fun. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Claudia Dory from Duxbury, Massachusetts.
Hey, Claudia, how are things in Duxbury?
Well, it's a little cold and rainy, but...
Oh, sorry to hear it.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, well, the Red Sox are winning mostly, so that's all right.
Even more importantly, the Bruins won last week.
Oh, there you are, yeah. Are you a hockey fan?
No, just because my son watches.
No, you are. You're a hockey fan for the moment. We understand
that's
how
right.
that is. Well, welcome to the show, Claudia. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you will be a winner.
I have to be. I am so nervous. Carl, you have to let me win.
I'll try my best.
Here is your first limerick.
The AARP can't reproach the Marlins' new hiring approach. They found expertise at the rest home release. An 80-year-old is there.
Coach!
Right!
Yay!
After a disastrous season so far, the Florida Marlins decided they needed to take action, so they hired a new interim coach, Jack McKeon. He's 80. As his
wow.
first action, he benched star shortstop Hanley Ramirez. That's right. He said, hey, kid, get off of my infield. Oh, it's amazing having a coach that old, you know. When he goes out to change the pitcher, left blinker's on the whole way.
Yeah, he goes, I forgot why I came out here. Just talk to me for a minute.
Here's your next limerick.
The sounds I emit chill your spine, and I won't have to share what is mine. Yes, I've got a tone that cuts straight to the bone. The worst sound in the world is a...
Oh, I have three teenagers. I know what the answer is. Wine.
Yes, wine. Surprise, whining is the worst sound in the world. Researchers at SUNY New Paltz liken the sound of whining to a high-pitched fire engine siren. The study they did was actually riddled with errors, but when it went before the editorial board, researchers were like, but I don't want my peers to review it. And they were like, fine, fine, whatever. Publish it. Here is your last limerick.
I can fly, but I do not feel free. The hive has repressed the true me. They say honey is sweet, but it stems from defeat. It's the essence of this depressed.
Oh, Carl, I'm going to get your voice on my machine. It's B.
It is B. Yay. According to a new study in Current Biology, honeybees are actually pretty moody little creatures prone to depression. Scientists know this because they conducted a series of therapy sessions with a drone. They did. It discovered there's a lot to be depressed about. For starters, everybody looks fat in black and yellow stripes. Lastly, he's a drone. And, of course, that means his girlfriend is cheating on him with the entire hive. Carl, how did Claudia do?
Claudia, you're all right. Three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail.
Oh, I'm so relieved. Now I don't have to be nervous anymore.
Well done. Right. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. We
love Bye-bye.
You.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Maz Jobrani has the lead, Peter. He has 4 points. J. Jesse Klein and Tom Bodetta tied for second. Each has 2 points.
All right, we have flipped a coin. Jesse is elected to go second, so Tom, you're up first. The clock will start when they begin your first question. Fill in the blank. On Wednesday, President Obama announced plans to withdraw 33,000 U.S. troops from blank.
Afghanistan?
Yes. The number one criminal on the FBI's 10 most wanted list, Boston gangster blank, was arrested in Santa Monica.
Whitey Bulger.
Yes. On Tuesday, the prime minister of blank survived a confidence vote.
Oh, Greece.
Yes. Flags in New Jersey were flown in half-staff on Thursday in honor of E Street Band saxophonist blank.
Clemens.
Clarence Clemens, the big man. A British farming couple are attempting to help their sheep-herding dog overcome his blank.
His fear of sheep.
Yes. This week, the Winklevoss twins decided to drop further legal action against blank.
The Zuckerman guy, Zuckerberg from Facebook.
Yeah, Alyssa Campanella of California rang the closing bell at the New York Stock Exchange in her first official act as blank.
Miss America.
Yeah, well, Miss USA. Close enough. A truck driver in Poland who accidentally crashed into a family's kitchen, climbed out of the cab, and blanked.
Sat down and ordered breakfast.
You're so close, I'm going to give it to you. Ask for a cup of coffee. The stunned family... The stunned family at the breakfast table was not amused by the request, according to the mom, and this is a very real quote. The driver seemed a bit dazed, but asked if he could have a coffee to steady his nerves. At that point, some bricks fell out of the wall onto his head and knocked him out cold, which was lucky for him. He wouldn't have gone off so lightly if I'd got my hands on him, unquote. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Well, Tom had a perfect game, Peter. 8 correct answers.
Oh, my God.
16 more points. Right. He now has 18 points on a commanding lead.
That's remarkable.
Should have gone first. Those were all the easy ones.
All right.
The bummer is that I did know almost all of those.
Yeah, that's always
the
case.
And I wanted to prepare everyone that I am more of an Us Weekly reader. And I consider Us Weekly to be the old gray lady.
Jesse, here we go. Fill in the blank. Thousands of residents of North Dakota evacuated to escape worsening blank.
Floods.
Right. Michelle Obama visited Nelson Mandela and did push-ups with Archbishop Desmond Tutu during her trip to blank this week.
South Africa.
Right. On Tuesday, the Senate unanimously confirmed blank as the next Secretary of Defense.
Panetta.
Right. Leon Panetta. Kentucky officials arranged for the possible relocation of 150 horses after Churchill Downs racetrack was hit by a blank on Wednesday.
Tornado?
Yes, during a 16-hour armed standoff with police, a man in Utah blanked.
Passed out.
No, he updated his Facebook page.
Oh, that's stupid.
I know. Toxicology reports showed that alcohol was involved in the crash that killed Ryan Dunn of blank fame.
Jackass.
Right, after much speculation, the Pottermore website was unveiled this week by author blank.
J.K. Rowling.
Right. A high-end salon in Manhattan is offering a special service for those suffering from blank.
Unibrows.
No. That they've
no,
got
they do
for
that
years.
Already.
They got that for years. Now, this is a new service for people who suffer from BlackBerry neck.
What?
They say that constantly peering down at your smartphone causes unsightly wrinkles on your neck. But for just $200, the Paul Lebrecht Salon and Spa will give you a neck cleansing, hydrating serum, and then, quote, some lymphatic drainage. You'll look great, which won't matter, because nobody else is going to look up from their own BlackBerries to see you. Carl, how did Jesse do in her debut in our quiz?
Jesse had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, but Tom has the lead still with 18 points.
All right, you're up against the pro here.
Good round.
So how many of them does Maz Dobrani need to take this from him?
He needs 7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
All right, here we go.
Oh, boy.
You can do this, Maz. This is for the game. As part of an international effort to drive down prices, the White House announced a plan Thursday to tap strategic blank reserves.
Oil.
Right. The Supreme Court ruled that 1.5 million female employees cannot band together to file a class action lawsuit against blank.
Walmart.
Right. Federal police arrested the leader of the La Familia drug cartel in blank on Tuesday.
Mexico.
Right. A man in Northern Ireland whose cows kept getting out of the shed at night set up a video camera and discovered blank.
That they were being stolen.
No, that his cow Daisy was unlocking the gate with her tongue. Spectators were wowed by 22-year-old golfer Rory McIlroy's win at the blank last weekend.
U.S. Open.
Yes, a hospital in England apologized after asking its elderly patients to call for nurses with a blank instead of a buzzer.
With a phone?
No, with a tambourine.
Really?
Residents were not happy about the new plan, with one saying, "It's ridiculous. These people are pensioners, not members of the Monkees or Mick Jagger." Although when you think about it, you realize those pensioners could be either the Monkees or Mick Jagger. Carl, did Maz do well enough to win?
He needed 7 correct answers, but Maz had just 4 correct answers. So with 18 points, Tom Baudet
well
is
done.
This week's champion.
Very
thank
nice.
You. Thank you very much.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, when the new cigarette labels fail, as they will inevitably, what finally will get people to stop smoking? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Chase, offering the Marriott Rewards Premier credit card. Details at marriottpremier.com/radio. The William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And the Join Us and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions' Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Amy Solomon. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Waltover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. And thanks also this week to Gary Yek, the senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. This is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now panel, what finally will make people stop smoking? Tom Baudet.
As a former smoker, I know this will work. Let them smoke wherever they want again, but make it legal to beat them.
Jesse Klein.
I think the FDA will put the scariest possible picture in the world on the box of cigarettes, which is a picture of a smiling Keith Richards.
And Master Browning.
I think the FDA will team up with the NRA to get gun owners to shoot smokers in an effort to get them to stop smoking.
Well, if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, Master Browning. A big welcome to Jesse Klein. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. And we'll see you next week in Nashville, Tennessee. This is NPR.